Hey y'all, how you doing? I'm Scott Horton. Welcome to my show. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. How you like that? Appreciate you tuning in. Got a good show lined up for you today. Our friend Jacob Hornberger is going to be back on the show to talk about some things with us. Well, you know what he's going to say. But he says it so well, you know, it's fine. And then Jason, man, I think I got a great job. And Jason's got the best job in the world, man. He gets to skewer the most evil people in the deadest of deadpans all damn day long at news.antiwar.com. And did you see the top headline? Tell me they didn't change the top headline to Jerusalem this morning. Let me see here. Antiwar.com/refresh this thing. Yeah, no, still a top story here. Mossad-backed Jundala vows support for ISIS. Well, you may already know what he means by that. You may already read the thing. Maybe you'll read it before he joins us on the air, but I don't want to spoil it. It's just a lot of fun there. Jason did, and boy, does he write in a great deadpan voice, too. All right, so, he speaks in one, too. Jason Ditz, news.antiwar.com. Keeping track of all what's going wrong in the world for you right there. And then, plus, I got a ton of news to cover for you. Oh, Hornberger's got an article on antiwar.com today. It's not the same one I'm going to interview him about, although maybe I will a little bit. It's Max Boot's newest plan for Iraq. Yeah, we're going to have to get into that a bit. There's actually a lot of good stuff on antiwar.com. I'm the guy in charge of picking those viewpoints, mostly. So there's Robert Perry on Kissinger and Ukraine. Very interesting piece there. Pat Buchanan has got a great one. He's, I admit, hit or miss, but he hits most often. Did we vote for war? Yeah. About the recent elections and the return of the Republican War Party, as though the Democrats weren't bad enough. Daniel Larrison is taking on a warmonger there from the American Conservative. Shane Harris, it's from Salon.com, and it's an excerpt of his book. I think he's the editor at Foreign Policy. He's got a book all about the national security state and Silicon Valley. And this is all about Google and the NSA and their relationship. And I admit I only read about half the damn thing. I need to get back to that. It's really something else. You should take a look at it. Google's secret NSA alliance. And then the spotlight today on antiwar.com is by Amy Goodman, Thomas Young, Rest in Peace. A great obit and a great story about Thomas Young, who killed himself last week. Or I guess presumably he did. Actually, it seems like maybe he just died of being sick and tired. It may not have been an overdose. I'm not exactly certain what happened to him. He may have just died. But he was a Iraq veteran against the war, wounded the same day in the same battle, really, as Casey Sheehan was killed. And, in fact, he was sent to rescue Casey's ambushed squad. He was also sent in the back of a flatbed truck to just get mowed down by the ambushers there in Sadr City. Shot through the spine. A broken man. And Amy tells a story here of how he thought he was signing up to go fight Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. And then, huh? We're going to invade Iraq? Young life thrown away. Younger man than me, that's for sure. And a great anti-war activist in the time he had left, too. So, in other words, help save other people's lives. Help keep other people out of the line of fire. Thomas Young, Rest in Peace by Amy Goodman. That's the spotlight today on antiwar.com. You can go back and listen to my interviews with Thomas Young. I think I interviewed him twice. They're all at scotthorton.org. Decent guy. All right, so there's so much to talk about, but I guess the most important thing, well, I don't know how to, most important. The breaking news is Israel, so let me just talk about Israel real quick. Four dead, three of them dual American citizens. Now, I don't know if they're really American Israelis or Israeli Americans or if it really matters too much. I don't know. I don't really see that whole dual citizenship thing anyway. What the hell is that? But anyway, whoever they were, they're four innocent people praying in a mosque. One of them a Brit, three Americans, or dual citizens some way or the other. And anyway, killed with knives and with a gun. Two cousins, they say, with knives, axes, and a gun, attacked during morning prayers. And apparently the Brit that they killed was the rabbi, or a rabbi. And so this is part of the new, what they have breaking out over there right now in Jerusalem and in the West Bank is, it's kind of a lone wolf intifada there. There doesn't seem to be a large-scale uprising, but there are one-off attacks by just self-recruited individuals, apparently. Although on Fox News this morning, they wasted absolutely no time whatsoever in bringing John Bolton in to simply declare that Hamas did it, and so look out for the repercussions for this, you bastards, and all this kind of thing. And so we're going to see nothing but a ratcheting up of this. And, you know, I don't know, context is everything. And the context is that Netanyahu will not end the occupation. He will not. He may be the last politician who possibly could do it. End the occupation, get the settlers out of the West Bank, or at least some of them, redraw the lines in a way where the Palestinians can have something like an independent state over there. And he just won't do it. And John Kerry really tried, but just, he didn't have the authority to tell Netanyahu or else. And so without the authority to tell Netanyahu or else, that's it. Netanyahu just bulldozed him and stonewalled him, and then time ran out and the thing was over. And so, as Noam Shazoff points out at the 972 blog this morning, well, Netanyahu said we could have permanent occupation and peace too. Whatever happened to that? He says if Netanyahu and Avigdor Lieberman and their cronies were out of power right now and this was happening on anyone else's watch, can you imagine what they would be saying about the failure of the current government to maintain security, et cetera, et cetera? But this is what they get. Intifada 3. Because what else are the Palestinians to do? And I'm not trying to justify anyone attacking innocent civilians. It's a target of opportunity in a war. And it's brutal and it's evil and it's wrong. It's murder. But it's murder when governments do it too, see? And so this is nothing like any kind of rationalization or justification for people killing each other. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is, and Americans, I believe, don't really understand this. I'd like to see some good research about just what they understand about this. But I think most people really don't know. And I'm thinking back on my own past, just from watching TV and whatever when I was a kid, what I learned in school. No one ever explained this to me. I had to want to know about it to even know that there was a permanent occupation of millions and millions of people in Gaza, in East Jerusalem, and the rest of the West Bank there. I don't mean Gaza is in the West Bank. I mean, there was an Oxford comma in there. There wasn't an Oxford comma, but it was East Jerusalem is part of the West Bank. That's what I mean. East Jerusalem and the rest of the West Bank from there. It's all occupied territory. These people have been conquered and occupied since 1967, since the Summer of Love and all the hippies and Woodstock and all that. That was when they were conquered. And they've been under a foreign country's military martial law ever since then. With no right to vote, no right to nothing. They're helots. They would be slaves if the Israelis wanted to try to force them to work. They certainly have no rights, but the Israelis would rather just be rid of them than make them work for free. Which I guess is nice. They don't have actual whips at their back all day. That's about the most generous thing you can say about it. It's not outright slavery. It's just Jim Crow apartheid. That's all. And it's a crisis. And it's going to continue. And the music's playing. But one more thing about this on the other side of this break. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. Hey, Al Scott here for Whole Food Multicomplete at WholeFoodComplete.com. Whole Food Multicomplete is an entire supplement program in one bottle containing 100% RDA of vitamins and minerals, plus live probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidant herbs, energy nutrients, and more. It's made in America using real foods and live probiotics. No chemical synthetics. It's soy-free, gluten-free, and independently tested and verified. They're so sure you'll love it, they're taking 20% off your first order with coupon code Scott Horton. Satisfaction is guaranteed at WholeFoodComplete.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. So the news is about these the four killed in a synagogue in West Jerusalem. But I want to point out a couple of things here. I don't know, a few different things. First of all, actually, this is a side point, but I mentioned John Bolton was on Fox News. One of the things that John Bolton said about this attack was, these people went in there with knives and a gun in there and actually were willing to get actual blood on their hands in order to do this, which just shows how extremely psychopathically, terroristically terrorist these madmen savages are. Well, now, so that actually is a little bit true, isn't it? Willing to go in there with a butcher knife and attack innocent people? He's kind of right. But look who's talking. John Bolton, who never went to Vietnam, though he was just the right age and supported the war of the time, got every deferment he possibly could, and then has spent the rest of his career mongering wars for other people to die in. To him, fighting a war means sitting at a desk in an air-conditioned office. Maybe blabbing his fat mouth into a Fox News camera about who ought to go kill who. But guess what, John Bolton? American soldiers and Marines, they get soaked in blood when they kick in people's doors and kill them in the middle of the night. They get soaked in blood when they're picking up their buddies' body parts off of the street after they get hit by an IED. They fight in real blood. And you know what? Even the drone operators commit suicide. In fact, maybe especially, according to them, they say, you know what? Being a fighter pilot, you just drop your bomb and fly away. But me, I gotta stand there and watch the guy. I can't hear him, but I can see him screaming as he bleeds out because I blew his legs off. And I gotta sit there and watch it and dream about it. And in fact, I dream about it while I'm awake too. And I can't stop thinking about it. And now I'm gonna eat a pistol now. Bye. Wide awake nightmares until they shoot themselves in the brain because of John Bolton and what he would have them do. And then, always with these warmongers, they just lack such self-awareness, you know? For him to sit there and say, to participate in actually getting your hands dirty? Why, that's disgusting! When he's the greatest warmonger in our society. Dirty hands is the problem, huh? Okay. Guess I get it. I think I get it. And then back to Netanyahu and what he says about the West Bank here. He says, he denies. This is from his UN speech. Netanyahu says, I'm ready to make a historic compromise. You know, the one he just killed. For a Palestinian state. I'm ready to make a historic compromise. So outright lie. But even then, he continues lying. Not because Israel occupies a foreign land. The people of Israel are not occupiers in the land of Israel. Ahem. Quite broadly defined. Thank you. History. Archaeology. I made up the last part there, you understand? After that, ahem. History, archaeology, and common sense all make clear. Common sense. First of all, Your Honor, just look at them. History, archaeology, and common sense all make clear that we have had a singular attachment to this land for over 3,000 years. I want peace because I want to create a better future for my people. It must be a genuine peace, anchored in mutual recognition and enduring security arrangements. Rock-solid security arrangements on the ground. Because, you see, Israeli withdrawals from Lebanon and Gaza created two militant enclaves on our borders and they shoot harmless rockets at us all day, he cried. In other words, this is how Mitchell Plitnik summarizes Netanyahu's statement at Loblog, I think quite accurately. So, the land is ours, and maybe someday we'll give the Palestinians a tiny bit of it if all of our conditions are met. That, in the Netanyahu dictionary, is a historic compromise. Now, there you go. Let's review. Judea and Samaria, as the Likud party platform calls the West Bank of the Jordan River, the occupied territory where millions of Palestinians live, according to Netanyahu, is not Palestinian land under occupation at all. He rejects the entire premise of reality. No, in fact, this is part of Israel proper. And okay, so right now there are a bunch of Palestinians there. And in fact, you know, I guess, I'd hate to let Palestinian Muslims and Christians be the majority in the country. So maybe we will have to break off a part of it to make sure that Jews stay the majority. But it'll only be because we feel like it, and it'll only be 100% on our terms. No negotiation. You crawl on your belly and take what we grant you, says the colonial occupier. And, I guess I gotta hasten to mention that you have to believe in magic. You have to believe in at least this monotheist religion to stretch your imagination to believe that Jews have a 3,000-year-old property right to that land that qualifies for anyone who believes in that religion, no matter who they are or where in the world they are or are from. Any Jew born in Iowa can move right to the West Bank, to the colonies, and get on the dole, subsidized by America and subsidized by the Israeli government, on the claim that they have the right to return to land because their great-great-great-grandfather to the 25th power may have been from there or something. Or I guess it'd be grandmother. And yet, a Palestinian who can see the city where he was born, you know, if he gets up on enough people's shoulders and can see over his confinement wall, his apartheid wall, can see the house that his father grew up in, that he was born in, right over there. And he does not have the right to return because he's the wrong religion. It's crazy. It's make-believe is what it is. It's religious fanaticism. It has no basis in any, certainly any Lockean system of property rights the way the enlightened West understands property rights. Any European who feels like it can move to Israel, but any Palestinian from Israel cannot. Does that sound right to you? Of course it's not. You have to start sputtering rationalizations and justifications because it's obviously criminal on the face of it. Because it's criminal. And this is what the leadership of the Israeli government declares. It'll stay this way forever. They're never giving up the West Bank. It is one state, an apartheid state. Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And, boy, is it a trade-off. I prove it every day on this show, don't I? The trade-off for using Skype. It sounds better than a landline. Sure as hell sounds better than a cell phone. In fact, Skype on a cell phone sounds better than a landline. Isn't that funny? But, boy, does it come with its glitches, too, I'll tell you. So right now I'm seeing if I can figure out how to add Jacob Hornberger as a buddy on here so I can call him. See, I sent my contact request once, but it won't let me send my contact request twice because those are the rules? I don't know. Anyway, well, I don't know. Makes for a pretty crappy radio show, though, I'll tell you that. All right, well, you know what? I'll go on. Oh, there's online. There he is. Hey, it's going to work now. Watch this. Okay. Bunker, okay, my man, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, you're here. Thank you so much for joining us. Hey, everybody, Jacob Hornberger. He's the founder and the president of the Future of Freedom Foundation. And he writes there almost every day, every other day or something. And the latest is the United States lost the Cold War. You don't say.
Yeah, I do say. You know, it's just amusing to see people celebrating, you know, the end of the Cold War and the fall of Berlin Wall. And those things are certainly things to celebrate. But this notion that the United States won is ridiculous. The truth is, Scott, that the Soviet Union lost the Cold War, and so did the United States.
All right. Well, you start explaining, and then I'm going to call your office line back on the other phone because your Skype sounds absolutely horrible for some reason. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But go ahead and get started anyway, and then we'll do the handoff here. It'll work.
Okay. We'll see. Does that improve it at all?
Oh, yeah. Actually, yeah, it did.
Okay. Then I think I figured out the problem.
Oh, okay. Great. Go ahead then.
Well, here's a situation. Look what we ended up with as a result of the Cold War. We ended up with a huge national security state apparatus consisting of a vast military establishment, what President Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex. We ended up with a CIA, an NSA, all the things that are inherent to totalitarian regimes and that were, in fact, inherent to the Soviet regime. In fact, when Eisenhower gave his farewell address in 1960, he admitted this. He says, look, this huge military-industrial complex is alien to our form of government. We've never had it in the history of this country. He said it was necessary because of the Cold War. I dispute that. I don't think it was necessary or beneficial. But certainly, once the Cold War ended, this whole great big national security state apparatus should have gone with it, and it didn't. It has essentially become, in the eyes of the military and the CIA and the NSA, a permanent part of America's governmental structure. And we've seen all the dark side things that have come with this: invasions, occupations, torture, hiring of Nazi officials, including many who participated in the Holocaust, all operating in secrecy, coups, supportive dictatorships. You know, so we end up with all the characteristics of a totalitarian regime, assassination and so forth. How can that be considered a victory? It's like we fought the Cold War and we lost. We became like them.
I'm reminded of, a couple of things here. First of all, Chalmers Johnson was the great anti-war voice of the last decade. And he called himself a former spear carrier for empire. He taught foreign policy at USC, and he taught his students for generations that the Cold War is the right thing, the damn Ruskies, you know? And then, just as you say, the Cold War ended, and the American Empire did not. It only expanded. And Chalmers Johnson said, whoa, now wait a minute. What's going on here? And instead of deciding, which would have benefited his own psyche if he had just said, oh, well, I guess now it's an empire, he said, you know what? I've been wrong my entire career. He was even a contract analyst for the CIA and said, I've been wrong. I promoted the Cold War, and I believed that it was a defensive measure against communism, and I was wrong. America was the aggressor in this thing all along. And just as you say, because of this combination between the military and intelligence state and those that produce the tools that they use to spy and kill.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Chalmers Johnson. You know, as you know, he passed away 3 or 4 years ago, and he I think was a real giant in alerting Americans to the bad direction that the United States took in the Cold War. And his three books, his trilogy of books, starting with Blowback, where he essentially predicted that 9/11 was going to happen is a direct result of foreign interventionism in the Middle East and in Afghanistan is just awesome. It's just an absolutely awesome trilogy of books. I couldn't recommend it more to people. And if they want to just get a taste of what Chalmers Johnson was writing, all they have to do is just Google Chalmers Johnson. There's a multiplicity of essays that he wrote that are just absolutely fantastic that are online. And that's essentially what happened. You know, we, instead of fighting communism with freedom, I mean, that's really what we should have done, that our heritage is freedom. It's free markets. It's limited government. And instead of doing that, we adopted the totalitarian model. And as I pointed out in my blog post today, it's a very interesting admission by the New York Times last week. They published an article that quoted a high U.S. official. I forget his name. I think his last name's Hill, maybe Clark Hill or something like that. He was an ambassador to some country. And they were quoting him as saying that North Korea operates under a national security state. And I found that a startling and surprising revelation that they would be doing this, because that's the apparatus that we've been operating under, a national security state. And people said at the time, Scott, that if you go down this direction, this totalitarian-like direction, in the name of fighting totalitarianism, you're going to become like them. And we can see it all across society, the militarization of American society, you know, the flyovers and praising the troops at big sporting events and in church services, and the militarization of the police. We see that increasingly. These are all the things that were going on in the Soviet Union, you know, the big parades in Moscow where the troops would go pass in review and the big tanks would come by and everybody would go gaga. This is the direction America took to fight the Cold War. In order to so-called defeat them, which was really just a process of making them spend more money than the federal government was spending, we essentially became like them. And now notice that everybody just assumes that this apparatus, which Eisenhower said was an alien form of government, and which Truman said about the CIA had become a sinister force. This is as far back as 1963, and I don't even know if he knew that they were hiring Nazis at the time. Maybe he did. This has become, in their eyes, a permanent part of America's governmental structure. No constitutional amendment was ever enacted altering our system of government to adopt this, and yet that's their position, that you can't get rid of us because we are an essential and necessary part of the federal government.
Right. So, man, there's a lot there. I mean, you called it a totalitarian system, and I think it's really important the way you say that back when they were building it, they admitted that, hey, you know, for the duration of the emergency, we have to accept this totalitarian bureaucracy, even with Truman at the reins of it all, as William F. Buckley put it, but just because of the emergency of world communism. But other than that, no, of course we would have a limited constitutional republic and all that. And yet now here we are, so many trillions spent, uncounted trillions spent on establishing this thing all along, generations raised up with, I mean, hell, just look at the last generation is raised up at permanent war with, they don't even know what peacetime even means. You know, the kids growing up now, but generations of this, my whole lifetime and the lifetime of my father before me, right, is basically, the entire military industrial complex. It is normal. And it's, as David Stockman put it, the great deformation. Think of, if it was Ron Paul automatically, just how severe the correction would be. Oh man, we gotta go to break. Right back with Jacob Hornberg. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with Jacob Hornberger. He's the founder and the president of the Future Freedom Foundation there at FFF.org. He's been really writing up a storm this last week, too. Go and check out his blog there. He's got one on Max Boot the Coward on antiwar.com today. This one is, the United States lost the Cold War. That's what we're talking about, how they tore down the Berlin Wall and moved it to Washington, D.C., and turned America into the Soviet Union, complete with night raids and bogus trials and bogus elections and everything I was told about the evils of communism when I was a kid. Virtually all of it you could apply to the American system now. But so as I was trying to get to before the break, and I had the music down too low, I screwed up on that. What I was trying to ask, though, is, Jacob, it's been generations of this. The national security budget for the last 7 years or so has been $1 trillion a year when you include VA care and the care and feeding of the hydrogen bombs under the Energy Department here. It's $1 trillion a year. So I don't know if it's possible for my little brain to imagine just how distorted the American economy is in favor of this system. And if we did have Ron Paul, who just, you know, with his magic force field to protect him, just executive ordered this entire thing right out of existence up there, then just how severe of a shock would that be? How many people are we talking about thrown out of work? 100 million people or something? Would our economy would have to adjust in such a severe way? It makes it seem, and there's so many vested interests in it for so much money. Again, it makes it just seem impossible that this can ever change. What do we do about it?
Well, this is what Eisenhower was talking about, when part of what he was talking about. I think one part was when he said this is a danger to our way of life, to our democratic processes. I think he was referring specifically to the danger of a coup, the same type of thing that we see in Egypt, where the which of course the U.S. national security state supports, and they supported the same thing that happened in Chile, where the military and intelligence forces remove a president from office on grounds of national security. But he was also saying that the insidious effect that this whole process has on economic activity. And he was saying that you know, you have all these projects, military projects in congressional districts all across America, so that if anybody starts talking like you do and says, well, maybe we ought to get this thing canceled, immediately the whole machine mobilizes and within a congressional district, for example, and says, oh, you know, contacts our congressman, don't you dare stop this project here. We're doing our part. We're putting together the bolts for this particular military weapon, and you're going to cost us jobs, and our community depends on this. And you see it all across America. You got cities that live in constant fear of losing their military base. And so you're right. When you put an entire nation of people, or at least a large portion of the nation, dependent on this military largesse, which is really just like welfare, it makes it extremely difficult. Just like the welfare state, that once you put people on the dole, they're scared to death of losing the dole. They don't want to lose their dole. But you got to think of all the people whose lives are being adversely affected, that are paying for this. Because let's face it, government has no money of itself. It has to take money from people in order to fund this gigantic monstrosity. And all of those people who are being victimized are the people that are paying exorbitant income taxes, that are funding this machine. That's what the IRS is about. The people are being plundered by the Federal Reserve. And I think if people ever can figure that out, they'll realize that it's in their interest to dismantle this thing. It's not so much people losing their jobs as having to move to other jobs in the private sector that are the productive jobs. So somebody that has a store next to a military base, yeah, they may go out of business near that military base, but they simply reopen in a part of town where people now have all the money that they were having taken from them to pay for this this military largesse. They're now producing. And then by laying off all these people that are on the military largesse, they become productive. So you have a doubly positive effect. Not only is everybody having their money taken from them to fund this largesse, now you have double the amount of people that are now producing wealth. It'd be the greatest thing we could ever do by dismantling this and restore our constitutional republic to our land.
That's so well said, and I hope people really understand that, because, you know, I was really trying to paint it as the worst case type scenario about just how bad the correction would have to be. But of course, what you're saying is right, that all the money that right now, again, $1 trillion a year that's basically just being nuked right out of existence, would be instead generating real wealth. And all those able-bodied males, instead of training how to kill people, would be creating stuff. And all those DARPA engineers, instead of building, you know, the latest laser weapon or whatever, could be figuring out how to better and cheaper distribute food to hungry people or whatever the problem is that needs solving. And it could only be a benefit. And I don't know how much time it would take, you know, if we could all of a sudden make the whole national security state disappear, but I don't think it'd be too long. I don't think we'd see a bunch of people starving. I think you'd just see a lot more need for a lot of creativity and a lot of newly freed up creativity ready to be deployed to solve the problems too. You know?
Well, I think it'd be immediate. I think you would see an immediate outburst of positive, creative, economic energy. It boggles the mind as to what these people have done to our country. I mean, here's the real irony, Scott. Is that how did they drive the Soviet Union into bankruptcy? They made it spend more money than it was bringing in. And this is what the arms race was all about. But and the conservatives were largely responsible for this. But what conservatives were ignoring is that our government was spending large quantities of money also. Now, we had an enormously bigger private sector to fund this. So we could outdo the Soviet Union. But the problem is that the government sector has continued spending ever increasing amounts of money. And so if that forced the Soviet empire to go bankrupt, why wouldn't the same principle apply to the American empire?
Same thing. And just look at it, $17 trillion debt. And, you know, as an economist, I'm really a great anti-war guy, but I saw David Stockman on Fox News saying, hey, this is just the same as the last bubble. Of course, newsman, your stock bubble, your stock portfolio is doing good. Now is the upside of the bubble, but it's just a bubble. Another fake prosperity, just like last time. It's all driven by paper money, and it's all just going to collapse again at some point in the next couple of years anyway. And seems pretty obvious that, you know, as even TV will admit, yeah, real wages pretty much haven't gone up since 1972. Or what? Yeah, why do you think that might be?
Yeah, I mean, this is what happens when you have a giant socialist-type apparatus, and we've got a double one. I mean, we've got the welfare state, which, you know, is based on the idea of mandatory charity and plundering and looting people that have money in order to give it to people that don't. Mandatory charity, that's what it is. And then you got this giant warfare state. And the important thing to recognize, Scott, is that neither one of these huge apparatuses that are really bankrupting America were ever part of America's governmental system or American society for the first 150 years or so of American history. Maybe a little bit less, 125 years or so with the welfare state. I mean, these are alien philosophies. They don't seem alien because they were here during our entire lifetimes.
Right.
But when you look at American history, they were never part of the founding governmental structure of this country. And that includes Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the Standing Army, CIA, NSA, gun control, the whole drug war, the whole shebang that we're living under today.
Well, now, I mean, they did have that giant so-called return to normalcy even after World War One. But then again, they were kind of always after South America. So it was maybe a much smaller military-industrial complex, but, you know, when Smedley Butler was rattling off that list of countries he had invaded for the cronies back in New York, there was a bit of a war machine already going, of course. But obviously, yeah, after World War II, they just said, as Senator Vandenberg said, get out there and scare the hell out of them, Harry, to President Truman, that, yeah, you're going to have to make up a big lie that the Soviets are coming for us so the American people will go along with us plundering them without limit. And it worked. They knew they were lying. They said they were lying.
Absolutely. And that you saw a variation of it with the Vietnam War, where they said, oh, we've been attacked at the Gulf of Tonkin. And so everybody gets all riled up and we end up wasting 58,000 American lives there. And it just goes on and on. And when are the American people finally going to say, stop, let's restore our republic to our land?
No time like the present. Thanks so much for your time again on the show, Jacob. Good to talk to you.
Oh, my pleasure, Scott. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
All right. Oops. That's the great Jacob Hornberger, everybody. FFF.org. The U.S. lost the Cold War. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. I got Jason Ditz on the line. He's the best thing ever happened, man. This guy, he's the news editor at antiwar.com. And what he does is he writes up all of what's happening in an anti-war way and with all the links to the background you need and the explanation of what it really means, despite the New York Times spin that he's linking you to. And it's just the best goddamn thing in the world. You got to bookmark it. You got to look at the top headlines every day on antiwar.com. All seven wars and plus Guantanamo and the police state and the rest of it, too. It's all there. News.antiwar.com. Jason Ditz. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing, Jason?
I'm doing good, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm still laughing my ass off about the top headline today at antiwar.com. Mossad-backed Jundala vows support for ISIS. What? Tell me the story.
Well, Jundala's got a long, pretty complicated history. It dates back to, well, right around the 9/11 era. They were originally an Al-Qaeda affiliate, but Al-Qaeda sort of scrapped them in 2003 because they were too regionally focused and Al-Qaeda wanted to focus more internationally. After that, they sort of just became guns for hire, particularly for attacks on Iran.
All right, now stop right there. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I can hear you loud and clear, but I'll ask you to back away from your microphone a little bit because it's breaking up on us a bit.
Okay.
But I can still hear you. I can still hear you just fine. So if you just back up a little, it'll be fine. And then, I'm sorry, please go ahead. Yeah, that sounds fine.
Okay.
But you were saying there are guns for hire. Hire by who?
Well, for a long time, it seemed like they were hired by the CIA because there were people, and they believed they were hired by the CIA because there were people with American passports giving them U.S. currency to attack Iran. But it turned out, and Foreign Policy broke that story in 2012, that these people were actually using forged American passports, and they were with Israeli intelligence.
And then, you know, this came up just last week because there was a leak to the New York Times about how America had some kind of relationship with Jundala, which looked like it was leaked in order to enrage the Iranian right to try to sabotage the nuclear deal from that end as best they could, which, of course, remind us all who were paying attention back then. And actually, I had missed it, I admit. That's not true. I was paying attention, but I didn't remember this until Ray McGovern had reminded me that Jundala killed a bunch of generals. I knew they'd killed a bunch of Iranian generals, but Ray reminded me it was in October 2009, right when Obama was proposing his first nuclear swap deal with the Iranians. That ended up falling through. That was a big part of the reason it fell through on the Iranian side, was because of this Israeli-sponsored, again, Al-Qaeda break-off group attack inside Iran, where, if I remember right, they had kidnapped a bunch of officers and executed them to make
there,
sure
there
to make their point
there.
Well.
There were a lot of attacks in that 2009-2010 time frame, and a lot of attacks on mosques in the southeast of Iran. But in 2010, Iran eventually captured the leaders of Jundala at the time, the Righi brothers, and executed them. So since then, the group had sort of gone back to being Pakistan-centric and had also, you know, gotten a lot smaller in profile. We haven't heard as much about them since then.
Right.
But that brings us to where we are now, which for a little while they were working with the Pakistani Taliban, and now they've decided that they're joining up with ISIS.
And now there was a bit of a controversy where a Taliban group had been quoted as saying they support ISIS and then quoted as backpedaling, although maybe they were just clarifying. I don't know if it was really backpedaling or not, that they said, oh, no, no, we still, of course, are loyal to Mullah Omar, the caliph and would-be caliph and leader of the Taliban first. We're just saying we like ISIS and they're doing a great job over there and that kind of thing. We don't want to compete with them or, you know, whatever. We're for them, but we're not saying that we are now led by them. And so that was like a bit of a clarification there. Do you know how this was this declaration that specific, or were they outright saying, forget Omar, we serve Ibrahim now?
Well, they were, and that was a big problem in the Pakistani Taliban, because there was a huge controversy around it. The top Pakistani Taliban spokesman was making a lot of these proclamations, so it was being seen as the entire group doing this. But ultimately, it turned out he was sort of doing this on his own with a handful of other leaders within the group. And they ended up firing him and saying that he no longer speaks for the Pakistani Taliban. Mm. And there were reports of him and five or six others defecting to ISIS.
Right. Oh, and, you know, by the way, since we're talking about such a controversial subject like this, it's important to clarify the source. Mark Perry from foreignpolicy.com, which is, you know, a project of the Washington Post and represents the foreign policy establishment center kind of wonkville there on the internet, foreignpolicy.com. He was the one who broke that story. And then the way I remember it, Jason, it didn't come with a bunch of denials. It came with a bunch of silence on the other side because they didn't really want to talk about what he had written there.
Right. It was a bizarre story because a lot of times countries get caught in these things and they issue denial that nobody really believes. But there wasn't really any denial at all. It was just silence after that story broke.
Yep. In some
ways that worked because a lot of people don't really remember that story.
Right. And now, Hirsch was the one, Seymour Hirsch, in the Redirection in the New Yorker in 2007. It could have been 8. I think 7. I'd have to go back and look. Anyway, the article is the Redirection. That was where he said America's backing all Al-Qaeda-like groups. Oops, we accidentally put Iran in power in Iraq, so now we got to redirect back toward the Saudi point of view, and we'll back Fatah al-Islam in Lebanon, the Muslim Brotherhood in Syria, and PJAK, the Kurdish Workers' Party rebels in Iran. The PJAK is the name of that breakoff, and Jundallah in the east. And then it seems like that was the one part of it that was wrong, was it wasn't CIA running Jundallah in eastern Iran. It was the Israelis, and they were doing so in order to disrupt the American president's attempt to make a nuclear deal, which is a huge thing for our number one most best ally in the whole wide world, Jason, to do to us, right? It's not like they're saving us from getting into a war. They're saving us from our president making a de facto peace deal.
Right, and a lot of the stuff about Jundallah was also reported in ABC. They had some pretty substantial coverage about it, as absolute fact. But it turned out not to be true.
Yeah, and you know what? That was Brian Ross. We should have known. It's that confirmation bias will get you. but when it's Brian Ross, the confirmation bias could have gone the other way. That's what I mean to say. All right. Well, now, so we got a couple of minutes. No, we don't. Yeah, we do. We got about a minute and a half for this segment or something. Can you give us the latest from the Kobani siege there in northern Syria on the Turkish border where the Kurdish Workers' Party fighters are holding out against ISIS?
Well, it seems to be much the same that it's been for the past few weeks, except a lot less media coverage. Kobani's still a lot of fighting going on there. It doesn't seem like either side's really decisively turn the tables on the other. both sides keep sending a few more reinforcements here and there, but it doesn't seem like either one of them's really changing anything on the ground.
Oh, that music proves how bad at math I am. I can't even count to three. Not live on the air, I can't. Anyway, thanks so much for your time. I know you got to go, but I appreciate you clarifying this great story for us, this incredible story, Jason. The great Jason Ditz, everybody. News.antiwar.com. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's the Scott Horton Show. Yeah, unreal, huh? Oh, you know, god dang it, my brain is such an idiot. I'd take responsibility. I was going to ask him, so what's the latest indication of Israeli association with these guys? I guess that's it, the Mark Perry article. I hadn't heard anything else. Probably a nowhere question anyway, but should have clarified that. But still, ain't that great? That's something else. So yeah, there's a bit of a method to the madness there, it seems like. As, former Israeli ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren, put it, the Israelis, they prefer these bad guys to those bad guys. And really, no lying, these bad guys means, to him, Al-Qaeda. Not just, you know, Sunni kings. But Al-Qaeda suicide bombers. Because those bad guys, well, they're backed by Iran. Those bad guys, that means Hezbollah and the Syrian government. And, of course, they always politely leave out the Iraqi government. They usually politely leave out the Iraqi government because people might remember that it was the Israel First neoconservatives who lied us into war with Iraq, mostly for Israeli purposes, Likud Party purposes of Ariel Sharon, and made it that way in the first place. So sometimes they leave out Iraq from the Shiite Crescent, but we ain't fooled. But anyway, here's the proof of my assertion.
For another couple more weeks.
Because, you know, if I'm going to make an assertion, I'll try to prove for you here real quick if I can.
Your interests, and how are you working to align with other partners?
All right, keep in mind, I don't speak for the government anymore. I'm speaking for me and Jeff.
No, you're not.
Haha, funny joke there. Even Jeffrey Goldberg says, man, you do not speak for me. But listen, he's lying when he says he's only speaking for himself, not the Israeli government that he just quit working for. And this is from after the fall of Mosul. This is from June 28th of this year. It's from after the declaration of the caliphate and Caliph Ibrahim and all of this crap. The sacking of Mosul. And he says at the beginning, and he says a couple of times throughout the quote, I'm only speaking for myself. But then he also says over and over again, so from the Israeli government's point of view, which is his point of view, the very same one, he is in fact speaking for Benjamin Netanyahu, as he concedes throughout the statement, even though he lies when he claims otherwise. Just because it's a pretty controversial thing to say outright. But then again, you know, psychopaths like explain themselves sometimes. Michael Oren, former Israeli ambassador to the United States. Listen.
And what I'm going to say is harsh, perhaps a little edgy. But if we have to choose the lesser of evils here, the lesser evil is the Sunnis over the Shiites. For the reason
you're not speaking
before.
For me.
Okay, it's a lesser evil. It's an evil, believe me, it's a terrible evil. Again, they've just taken out 1,700 former Iraqi soldiers and shot them in a field. But who are they fighting against? They're fighting against the proxy with Iran that's complicit in the murder of 160,000 people in Syria. You can just, you know, do the math. And again, one side is armed with suicide bombers and rockets. The other side has access to military nuclear capabilities. So from Israel's perspective, you know, if someone's got, if there's got to be an evil that's going to prevail, you know, let the Sunni evil prevail. And I, again, I'm speaking entirely for myself. As the Sykes-Picot system breaks down, that, you know, Israel has got to guard its borders. We have built a high-tech fence very quickly along our Egyptian border. We're building a high-tech fence along our Syrian border. Here. We have a primary interest in maintaining the stability of Jordan. Our security border is not the Jordanian-Israeli border. It's the Jordanian-Iraqi border.
From there. You can Google it yourself. The Aspen Institute. Just search Oren, O-R-E-N, Oren Sunnis. It'll come right up in your YouTube results. There he is on the stage at the Aspen Institute, June 28th of this year, with Jeffrey Goldberg. There you go. And he specifies, yeah, no, I'm talking about the butchers of the Islamic State. Yeah, the suicide bombers, the guys who do mass executions of all their prisoners and put it up on Live Leak. Yeah, those guys. Let them prevail, he says. Because Israel hates Iran. Well, you might, if you're an American, ask, so what if Israel hates spinach? Why does America's policy have to have anything to do with what they want? The al-Nusra Front, they're loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher in New York. So, screw what Israel wants. Now, I'm not saying we should go to war against the al-Nusra Front, because as Mitchell Prothero says, they're under explicit instructions to leave Americans alone in Syria, on the Syrian battlefield right now. So, might as well leave their asses alone. But if anybody's our enemy, it's the Sunni-based insurgency in Syria, not the Ba'athist government that helped Bill Clinton and George W. Bush kill the Mujahideen. And I'm not a defender of Assad because he's a sick, evil, brutal autocrat. He's got no right to even live, much less be the ruler of other people. None of that. But for America to still be supporting the rebels against him, because that's what Israel wants? At this point, even after the declaration of the caliphate, come on. It's out of control. And, you know, read it and weep. I got the goddamn CNN story here, don't I? Where is it? Oh, don't tell me I lost my tab. I'll find the tab. I did lose a bunch of tabs. CNN Rethinking Syria is my Googles, and there you go. Obama seeks new Syria strategy. It would be like, and I know I'm repeating myself, but I'm just so brilliant that, you know, what am I going to do? Say something else when I already got it right? This would be like if the British and the French decided they were going to intervene in our civil war, and they decided that the South were the real enemy, you know, the evil slave-owning communist conscriptors. We got to go get them. But, of course, the road to Richmond runs through D.C., first, we have to invade New York. First, we have to invade D.C. First, we have to conquer Vermont. First, we have to regime change the Yankee government in the north. Only then does it make sense for us to be able to attack the south. Huh? Does that make any sense? That's what they're saying here. We can't attack ISIS without attacking their greatest enemy. Well, why not? Because, as Oren claims, he's killed 160,000 people. He means a total of that many have died in the war, half of them on Assad's side. Yeah, it's a brutal war. America and its allies have made it that way. Assad would have won this thing a long time ago, except for America and Saudi and Turkey and Qatar, and everybody knows that. It's madness, and this is still the policy. Obama seeks new Syria strategy. Read this thing. It's about they got to get rid of Assad first. The autocrat with the three-piece suit and the clean-shaven chin. The Saddam Hussein. They got to de-Ba'athify his government and army for the Mujahideen, to beat the Mujahideen. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. And they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Robertson at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. It's libertarian foreign policy mostly. Check out my website, scotthorton.org. Join up, sign up the podcast feed if you want, YouTube or, dang on, iTunes, I mean, or Stitcher. Join up the chat room during the show, scotthorton.org/chat. If you like chat rooms, there's a few people hanging out in there today. Hey, everybody. And, yay, I already did two interviews, but I still got two more segments to talk about things I want to talk about, even without an interviewee to discuss them with, which is all right with me. Let me stick with the war here for a minute, and I got police state stuff coming up too. But with the war, I wanted to mention, this guy, Peter Kasich, the last guy who, was murdered, the last American who was, murdered, beheaded by the Islamic State the other day. He was a friend of my new friend, this show's new friend, Mitchell Prothero, reporter from McClatchy Newspapers, who I've been talking with since, I guess, the spring, who reports out of Irbil. And I had known that before. He had told me that. But now he wrote about it. Now that the guy's dead, he wrote a thing for McClatchy Newspapers about the guy and everything and explains they were roommates in Beirut, and he helped turn the guy on to the charity that he wanted to go work for. And he really was just over there. He was an Iraq war veteran. Who, you know, this is how he was dealing with his demons, apparently, was he put himself over there at risk to bring food to the desperately war-starving. And he got himself nabbed in the process of doing so. And then I thought it was nice that Prothero also stuck up for Kasich's legacy a bit and said he thinks that the reason that there is no footage of him on his knees reading a statement or any of this stuff is because he must have fought to his death, which is not to denigrate the other guys who literally had a gun to their head as they were reading those statements and those other videos, but it is to give credit to him for resisting, because what the hell situation is that to be in, can you imagine? But anyway, so, I just thought that was too bad. It's worth mentioning, and I think it's a shame that this guy's death is going to be, of course, exploited by the war party, especially because he's an American veteran, having been murdered. But I gotta emphasize to you, and I think you already know this somehow, you know what? Shepard Smith knows this. I saw Shepard Smith say it on Fox News yesterday, so that's it. It's acceptable. You ain't gotta be Ron Paul. You ain't gotta be, that commie rat hypocrite Michael Moore. Everybody understands now. They're trying to lure us in. And in fact, the quote, there's the direct quote is in the McClatchy piece, not in Prothero's piece, but in the one by Hannah Alam, where they say they are eagerly awaiting. God, I can't talk today. I'm sorry. They are, quote, eagerly awaiting the return of America's armies to fight them. That's what they want. They cut off an American soldier, veteran, cut off his head and say outright, we dare you to come back here. Please, we need you to come back here. That's how terrorism works. The action is in the reaction. They're trying to provoke you. I'm actually surprised they haven't called Barack Obama a homo or just resorted to the, you know, basest sixth grade kind of taunts. I mean, that's basically what this is. They're saying you're not man enough to come over here and waste another $6 trillion losing. We dare you to try. And so what we're supposed to do, even if this guy was a friend of a friend, okay, is we're supposed to be smart and not react. We're supposed to do the right thing. Jeez, if these guys are begging for ground troops, maybe we should deny them their greatest pleasure. They don't mind dying. They're looking for the law as individuals here in this army. These guys are believers in the Islamic State. And they're in it for the long game. It's just like Jeff Huber said about Osama bin Laden, he's dead and loving it. He didn't care whether he got to become the caliph of it all. He didn't have the religious authority to pretend to be the caliph. He just wanted to see somebody be the caliph. That's all he wanted. He got what he wanted. George Bush turned Western Iraq into bin Ladenistan, Wild West Jihadistan, for a decade now. And then Barack Obama doubled down and made all of Eastern Syria Jihadistan in the very, not quite as overtly, but in the same way, pretty much, and created this beast. And so, on the fight goes. But, you know, you may remember back in 2007 where the previous Baghdadi, the guy that replaced Zarqawi, and according to Prothero, and I used to know about this, but forgot what little I knew, supposedly was killed back in 2010 before he was replaced by Omar Baku al-Baghdadi, he said, don't go. We don't want the Americans to leave. We want them to stay. In fact, no, that I got it wrong. It was Zawahiri's message to him was, we need the Americans to stay. The mission is to completely bankrupt them, not see them wise up and get out of here. Make them stay. Attack them. Pick a fight. Do something. As the Americans were wising up finally and getting the hell out of there. And really, that's not true, because it was mostly that they fought for the majority that said, thanks a lot, sucker, now beat it, pretty more apt appraisal of the situation over there. The Dawah party said, yeah, thanks a lot for using all of your manpower to kick all the Sunnis out of Baghdad for us and create Southern Shiistan. Appreciate it. Makes good politics for them to have an Islamist enemy in Sunnistan, independent Sunnistan next door, too. Maliki thought so anyway. He won his re-election in April. But then the Islamic State was too powerful. And after his humiliating defeat in Mosul, he was driven from power. But he was reelected on the theory that I'm protecting you from the Sunni terrorists. That was his shtick. Kind of same as always. But they want us there. That's the point. Okay, and so now in a couple of more minutes I have in this segment, I want to direct you to our friend Patrick Coburn in The Independent, as well as the war nerd over there at Pando. And now, I think on their face, these guys are disagreeing with each other. Coburn seems to think they're kind of on the upswing here. But despite the fact that they have quite a different tone, Warnerd is saying, to cut to the chase, we've seen ISIS's high water mark. These guys suck, and they're dying, and good riddance. And this is the worst that they're ever going to be able to do. And I think if you actually go through and, you know, shuffle these two stories together in a way, they don't really outright contradict each other. Coburn is saying, he's really quoting a Kurdish guy claiming, in the headline, claiming that ISIS has as many as 200,000 fighters. But he admits he's just kind of, you know, estimating off the top of his head. If you heard the Mitchell Prothero interview from a couple of weeks ago, the KPFK show, he talked about, you know, CIA says 30,000, and yet look, they're fighting in Kobani, they're fighting east of Baghdad, they're fighting to the southwest of Baghdad and in Anbar province, they're holding Mosul, they're fighting into Crete. That's more than 30,000 guys, man. You know, I don't know how many guys it is, but it's a lot. And Coburn has said all along that when they come into town, they recruit people to work for them, and then you better not betray them because they'll crucify your ass. And everybody knows that. So once you're recruited, you're pretty much in the deal, even if you're the locals, as long as they can enforce it. Doesn't mean they're all powerful. It just means that's their system, is mass conscription everywhere they go. They bring people into their group. Makes them vulnerable, but it also, you know, at least in the short term, helps them multiply their numbers and power. But Warnerd is saying they're not moving beyond the borders of where they are now, and I don't think Coburn would argue with that. Erbil is pretty much safe. Baghdad is safe. There may be a fight over Kirkuk, but the Kurdish militias are holding out in Kobani. ISIS ain't that bad after all. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. Darrenscoffee.com.
I don't know.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Scott. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. I don't know. Working on it. All right, so... I wanted to point out, I guess we're going to run it. Are we already running on antiwar.com or we're going to run it on antiwar.com? It's Paul Pilar about the myth of the surge. And I don't always approve his stuff because he's not always good on stuff. He's pretty good. But here's the thing about him. I just can't interview this guy because it wouldn't work out right because he's got a stamp on the NIE of 2002. And I just... Yeah, I'd like to interview him about the good things he writes sometimes, but then I just think, man, I think that's kind of irredeemable. And I don't want to hear a bunch of excuses. I just, eh. I'll still tell you to read his article, though. He's right about the bogus myth of the surge worked in 2007. As though America somehow won the war in Iraq, other than for Osama bin Laden and the Ayatollah Khamenei. He won it for them. Who else did he win it for? Kinda Israel, but not really. Oh, in fact, I meant to backtrack to this. I told you when Michael Oren said what he said in that clip, it was this June, after the declaration of the caliphate. But after he's no longer literally representing the government of Israel. But last year ago, when he still was the ambassador, he said the exact same thing to the Jerusalem Post. The headline is, Israel wanted Assad gone since the start of the Syrian civil war. And this is actually what I was thinking of. It was the other Oren quote, where he politely leaves Baghdad out of the Tehran-Damascus-Baghdad-Beirut arc. The Shia Crescent. So, yeah, I guess, no surprise that Jandala bin Ladenite terrorists in Pakistan and Israel see it the same way when it comes to Iran issues and what's going on in Syria. Ain't it funny? Geez, Scott, what could possibly explain an American policy that focuses on removing Assad in the middle of him being the most available professional proxy army to kill the Islamic State? Because that's what Israel wants. Sorry, that's the answer. I mean, I guess it's because that's what Saudi wants too, but I don't think Saudi owns D.C. like Israel owns D.C. Anyway, police state news. They're ready for war in Ferguson right now. They're waiting for the grand jury to no-bill this thing because that's what the prosecutor wants. You may have missed this, but the fix is in. I think you could Google that. Ferguson, fix is in. And it's Dana Milbank at the Washington Post. And, of course, the old saying is any prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich. Any prosecutor, because there's no defense. And the threshold for for being indicted is a preponderance of the evidence or something like that, 51% kind of standard. Barely probable cause, rather than, in fact, probable cause. That's the 50% standard right there. Probable, meaning better than 51%. Of course, it's an attempt to quantify quality, but still, it's a very low threshold. There is no defense. The prosecutor gets to present the evidence however he wants, and 999 times out of 1,000, prosecutor presents a case to a grand jury like he wants an indictment, he gets one. Simple as that. But if a prosecutor presents a case to a grand jury like he doesn't want one, or in fact says, hey, you guys decide because, hey, then it won't be my fault when you no-bill him, that means he doesn't want the conviction. and grand juries, and I think Radley Balco wrote about the grand jury system. I'm pretty sure my footnote's right here, that it was Balco that wrote about the, partially wrote about the grand jury system in that part of Missouri, and how all the grand jurors are all cops' wives and off-duty, you know, reserve deputies and whatever, whatever. They're all part of the state. And they're not going to convict this cop for killing this unarmed guy. Because he's one of them. It's not so much a race thing as a state thing. You know, I have an article here about this young white girl, the kind that TV would freak out about if she was kidnapped. We'd never hear the end of it. Right? And you'd be right to say it is a racist system, like, in that sense. But here, she was leaving a party. A cop jumped on her hood and shot her through her windshield over and over and over again. And he deliberately got in the way of her car. And then just blasted her. You can always read these things at the Liberty Crier, man. Trevor Lyman keeps track of it all for you there. At the Liberty Crier. And you can watch the video. You watch the freaking video. This girl, the cop is just breaking up a party. High school kids having a party. Mom's out of town. This girl is driving away. The cop gets in front of her, jumps on her hood, and then just shoots her to death. He got no build. So it's not just race. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, they kill a black guy every 26 or 28 hours or whatever the statistic is. So, yeah, it's racist as hell. But the real racial difference is between members of the Uber mention, the people in the government club, versus the rest of us. And, you know, billionaires are de facto members of the state. If, I guess if you're a leftist, then you could look at it like the lowliest meter maid is a de facto billionaire when it comes to accountability before the law. You can't even fire them without winning a lawsuit against them. You know, government employees. The fact that government employees are even allowed to have unions at all. Public servants are allowed to have unions? What? Like, they have the right to be our government? You don't have the right to a government job? Are you crazy? That is insane. The right to be a servant of people who could fire you with their democratic will if they felt like, in theory, right? Anyway, we saw a union try to sabotage a mayor claiming she was throwing gang signs the other day. It was the police union. The local news admitted it was the chief of the police union that gave them the story. And why? Because she tried to hold a cop accountable for murdering somebody. Charge him with man 9 or something. And they decided, no, they, the state, the cop, the state's enforcers, the cops, they come first. They created us. We live at their pleasure. And that includes our mayor, too. The one that we elect. They will decide whether she gets to be mayor or not. Because they're our servants. Anyway, kind of off on a tangent. But anyway, they kill people all the time. And they're going to let Darren Wilson, who murdered Mike Brown, get away with it. And then TV wants a riot so bad, it's almost unreal. If you've seen the coverage, especially on MSNBC... What in the world? And I don't really expect there's going to be riots. I think probably we'll hear one loud, combined, frustrated sigh of, yeah, we know, we live here. I'm not saying they should be accepting it, but I'm just saying, you think they're going to be shocked and surprised when he gets no build? Or you think they're going to just flip out and riot? I doubt it. I don't know. But will the cops... The cops might just riot. The cops might just go in there and kill whoever they feel like. So I would urge helpless civilians there to be as careful as you can when the news breaks. Because these cops, they believe their own lies about in, you know, what danger they're in all the time. Even though they're the ones murdering people all damn day. Hardly anyone ever kills a cop. 30 a year in a country of 300 million people with 20,000 police departments, millions of cops, and 30 a year get murdered. Give me a break. More cab drivers get murdered on the job than cops. Anyway, if you believe in magic, you know, religious stuff or whatever, pray for the civilians of Ferguson, which, you know, it should include the cops. They're ostensibly civilians, too, but don't tell them that. They think they're a bunch of soldiers. They dress up like ISIS out there. Look at them. Their camouflage and their masks and their machine guns and look like a bunch of terrorists. Oh, and today they're voting on the USA Freedom Act, which has as a rider reauthorization for the USA Patriot Act, and that ought to give you a clue what they mean by that. Big fake NSA reform to try to tire you out of hating the NSA and their mass spying program. Don't buy it. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.